Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Pastor Will Davis. He's an author, founding and senior pastor of Austin Christian Fellowship. And today I am talking with him about his latest book, which is A Man Who Told Us the Truth. Pastor Will, welcome to Life Quest.
Dwight, it's a pleasure. I'm honored. Thanks for having me, sir.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Well, that's a really fun question. I didn't write this book at this time. I wrote this book 10 years ago.
Oh, my.
Actually, maybe 12 years ago.
Okay.
It was actually the first book I ever wrote.
Wow.
And it has been sitting on my hard drive, driving me crazy.
Yes.
And the reason I've been sitting on it for so long is it's a book that is written primarily to non-Christians.
Mm-hmm.
It is in a language and conversation style, as if I'm sitting over a period of 8 weeks with an unbeliever processing Christ with them.
Right.
And so the arguments, the language, the setup is all kind of different from what most Christian audiences are used to. I just couldn't find anybody to publish it because of that.
I see.
So it's taken, because most non-Christians don't walk in Christian bookstores.
You're right.
So we sat on it this long, and I got a nudge by the Holy Spirit to go ahead and publish it last fall, and so here it sits, and I'm thrilled to have it out.
Well, I'm sure our listeners are going to be very interested in this. The whole book, but chapter one is titled, Let's Talk About Truth. And you've got to do some definitions for us here and what that would mean to the average person.
Yes, sir. And in our, depending on your age, in our postmodern culture, the millennial age group, my kids' age group, they're not real fond of absolute, you know, the buck stops here reality. That
okay.
there's an ultimate power and ultimate source that can impose its will and its rules on people. Other than gravity,
yes, right.
They're not real fond of absolutes. And so the postmodern world has kind of said truth is relative. My truth is mine. Your truth is yours. Let's not mingle the two, and let's not force each other. And so you see a lot of that in our culture these days.
Well,
the stuff in our headlines in the court system is about, well, whose truth do we go by?
Yeah. I remember, because I am older, I remember the mid-60s when all of a sudden Eastern religions became the vogue among some. It was a matter of, well, there's truth there too. And that was the attitude.
Yeah, and it's a bit that truth is in the eye of the beholder. And what I believe God calls us and to believe in Scripture, and what I think Christ taught is that truth is an objective, immovable reality that is not defined by us, but by defined by the Creator, and revealed by the Creator in Jesus Christ ultimately. And so, and that the title, A Man Who Told Us the Truth, is actually something Jesus said of himself in John 8:40. He said, I am a man who told you the truth that I heard from God. And I remember where I was and what I was doing when I read that phrase how many years ago. And it just, he is the man who, there is a person in history who's told us what truth is. And absolute truth, and shown it to us. And by the way, if you look at Christ and his life, the news is really good about truth.
Yes.
And so I knew then I wanted to write and present this man of truth to people who don't believe in it.
We have four Gospels, the story of Jesus on this earth. You really like St. John and his theological approach.
I do, especially for people that are philosophically wired.
Uh-huh.
The other three Gospels, as you well know, called the Synoptics, kind of get synopses of Jesus' life. I love Mark. It's like the Indiana Jones version of the Gospel. I can just hear that in the background the whole time. And Mark's favorite word is immediately, immediately, immediately.
Yes.
John comes at it a lot of years later with a lot of different perspective, and he starts off with that lofty concept of the Word, the idea, the concept of God becoming flesh, and engages the thinking Jews and Greeks in his audience around that concept. And I live in Austin, Texas, where the average education level is a master's degree, and a lot of people walk around thinking they're cerebrally have graduated beyond faith.
Yes, I understand.
And so engaging them from John and his lofty theological concepts seemed like the best place to come with them.
And you take the Gospel of John, and you suggest that John is communicating the story and who Jesus was in three categories. Would you tell our listeners about that? It's very good. And, you know, in the King James Version, verily, verily, or truly, truly statements.
Okay, yeah.
And then the comments about the whole nature of truth. And finally, the controversial statements that link Jesus as the main promoter of ultimate truth.
Thank you. It's been a long day. And I dive kind of deep on those because Jesus' word choice wasn't random. And so that verily, verily, or truly, truly, or literally amen, amen statement. Or Jesus saying, here's what truth is. Let me tell you about the truth. You know, you've heard it said this. I say to you this.
Right.
Or you're never going to really know truth until you know me.
Mm-hmm.
Those were I kind of build a lot of thinking around those. And the last two are pretty peculiar, Dwight, in the sense that Jesus would say, okay, let me tell you Paul Harvey-esque the rest of the story.
Yes, ma'am.
About evil or about heaven or about religion. Here's the truth on this. And, oh, by the way, second thing, you're never going to understand this until you know me.
Hmm.
So he was very self-oriented in his descriptions of truth. That ultimately, I've got the key to it. And until you get with me, you'll never unlock what truth is. That's crazy. That's absolutely nuts. We lock people up today who say those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And yet there stands Jesus. I love the scene in John 18. I talk about it early in the book, and Jesus in front of Pilate. And he's bound, he's bleeding, he's hours away from being executed. He's standing in front of a judge who can condemn him. And he's talking about his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about truth. What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. And yet there he is. So I love teeing that up to say, this guy didn't shy away from saying some pretty crazy things about truth. What do you think of that?
In the section called Conversation Killing 101, you talk about the fact that we can argue and discuss and about just about every subject around, but when you get to a statement of what do you think of God or something like that, people say, well, you know, I hear my mother calling or something. You know, they just disappear. And you gave some, I like the suggestions here, you know, part of that is just people really don't know what they believe. Or they believe it, but they're not really practicing it.
They don't know what they believe, so they don't want to feel uninformed.
Yeah.
That's some of it. In a lot of cases, I had my knee partially replaced a few weeks ago, and I'm in physical therapy now, and my physical therapist is a young lady I can tell who's not walking with God. And she grew up in the Christian church, but she has kind of adjusted her theology, I believe, mm-hmm. to fit her lifestyle.
Right, yes.
So some people don't want to go in a conversation about God because it might be self-indicting. And we know in our guts, if there is a creator and if we are the product of creation, he's not one with whom we can negotiate. And so we tend to want to change our theology or just not deal with God altogether, because if we go with God as he is, we're all indicted.
Yes.
So a lot of people just say, I just want to write him off, or I don't think he exists, or I think he's a force, but he's really good, or I believe in karma, which means it's up to me because I'm a good person.
Uh-huh.
And so you can talk about anything today, and we do,
right?
But God, because God is because he's an absolute, and nobody wants absolutes today.
It also seems to me that a big theme of what Christianity is or should be, and which is what your book is about, is the truth about God, because there are misconceptions, and even in the Christian faith, we kind of try to divide up the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament as revealed through Jesus, and you're saying, but just let me tell you about God.
Yeah, again, I'm trying to write the book from the standpoint of how Jesus saw things,
mm-hmm.
and I argue in the book that Jesus came to set the record straight about God, and he was God's biggest fan, and that he thought the news about God was really good, and he did that against a religious backdrop coming out of the exile, where Phariseeism was off the charts, and God was, you know, big and lofty. You didn't say his name out loud, and mm-hmm. he just says, no, man, you call him Father, you call him Abba.
Yes.
And so I feel like we've got some bad press. God has some bad press and mm-hmm. incorrect thinking about him, that Jesus, our leader, came to correct the image of God. And by the way, the ultimate expression of that correction was the cross. This is God. Any questions? That's where I think the gospel goes. And that's a whole different cry and presentation from what people want to say about God today and his lightning bolt throwing, I hate homosexuals, whatever.
Yeah.
mindset.
Yeah. And I'm speaking for God, they usually are saying.
Right.
Which reflects right. badly on God. In chapter 4, which really resonated with me because I had an experience similar to what you start the chapter with. It's called The Dad of Your Dreams, The Truth About Your Father. And I remember talking to a lady who'd grown up as a Christian but wasn't practicing at all. And I talked about God is like father. And she stopped me and said, boy, you don't know my father. And it wasn't, she had a hard time connecting with that thought. And yet, as you said, it's the best father who you would want.
It may be the most profound chapter in the book, from the aha that people get when they read it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually now a lot of scientific data around some sociological studies that we do indeed, Dwight, project onto God the image of our earthly dad.
Yeah.
I've never shared this in a room where tears didn't come immediately.
Huh.
And that you tend to expect God to act like dad, and your relationship with God will parallel your relationship with dad until you rethink God in light of who he is, which is why Jesus came to show us who God really was. So if my dad was abusive, well, I've got a girl on my staff. I just talked to her. Her original dad left her when she was one. Her stepdad abandoned her when she was five.
Mm.
Her next male leader role model, which was her fiancé, committed suicide while they were engaged.
Mm-hmm.
This girl's got a real difficult time trusting God. Any questions? Of course she does.
Yeah.
And so Jesus came along to say that Isaiah 9, he is wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting father, that Christmas text. Everlasting is the adjective God put in front of father. He is not going to grow old. He's not going to go away. He's not going to bail on you. He's not going to pick a family down the street he loves more. He is your father everlasting. That's who Jesus wanted us to see God as. And again, we got a lot of people listening to your show right now that probably have limited takes on God because of our dad image. There's no such thing as a perfect dad.
Yes.
That's really liberating to apply the image of Jesus on the God. You know, Father, Philip, when you've seen me, you've seen the Father. That's really good news in light of what some of the experiences are that some of us have had.
And it takes a lot to change that contrast that people have conjured up. This program is heard on 75 stations across the United States and overseas and stuff like that. And you think about all the different individuals and all the needs and all the experiences they've had, good and bad. But as Christians, I'm kind of thinking we're not always the best describers or ambassadors for God.
I don't know why you would say that. I'm shocked.
Yeah,
shocked
no, right.
to hear you say that. Yeah, there's a chapter in the book on love.
Yeah.
The truth about love. And that chapter is a bit of a result of the thing you just said, Dwight, that Jesus, when asked about the litmus test for his followers, did not choose theology or buildings or behaviors. He chose love. And that feels like we're all set up to fail because we sue each other over where the organ goes
yes.
in the church. You know,
right.
We sue over what the air conditioning set on.
Yes.
And so, but again, Jesus did not set the standard for us based on who we were. He set the standard for us based on who his Father is.
Mm-hmm.
His Father is love. And so you're right. We have this lofty birthmark, so to speak, in us to live up to, which is love, agape love.
Mm-hmm.
Not our kind of love, God's kind of love. It was only possible with God in us. And you're right, we often come out of our flesh, our inclinations, our what I call Genesis 3 reality in us, not
yeah.
Genesis 1 and 2 in us, and we look like it. And unless I'm full of God's Spirit, I may not manifest the Christ that who as he really is. And that's one of the biggest gripes, and I acknowledge this in the book, lost people have about Christianity, is you guys don't get along very well.
It's true.
No,
true. And it's true. And also, we have daily opportunities to screw up with this, whether it's, you know, in the line at Walmart and somebody can't find anything because they discovered they're actually going to have to pay for their products, or strange people on the freeway.
Yeah, or people we've decided we don't be married to anymore.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's everywhere. And Jesus called us, and you know, we have a bit of a cultural lens on this. I'm blessed to travel a lot around the world, especially third world nations. And I see different forms of Christianity in those places.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a pastor in Uganda, a friend of mine, who's been at the same church now 30-something years. He has walked through 3 divorces in his church in 30 years.
I see.
And I, in my church, have walked through more. I think there are more people divorced or remarried than the people that are in the first marriages in my church. I church a couple thousand people.
Right. Which parallels the general public.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So it's our Western form of Christianity may not always give the best picture of what Christianity is meant to be.
Yeah. You distinguish between religion and Christianity.
I do, and I'm real fond of that. I actually believe religion leads you away from God, and that religion goes back to Genesis chapter 3 when Adam and Eve are trying to cover themselves,
mm-hmm.
and that's, I think, what religion is man's effort to cover himself and make himself acceptable to God, and it never does. It's incapable of doing so, and I put a chart, a graph in the book where I show the, excuse me, the difference between the two. The point of origin for religion is with human beings. It is man trying to reach God, and it never accomplishes it. It can't, because God is holy and otherworldly. The point of origin with Christianity begins with God and descends, Philippians 2, to us in the form of Christ, so God can become accessible. And in religion, man is in charge. Man sets the rules. Man even defines the destination and the definition of the goal and sets the terms. Man is in control. In Christianity, man is completely in a surrendering posture. God has set the terms. God has set the rules. God has determined the means by which he is known. And we have to simply yield to it. And that's dramatic. Those two are dramatically different. Religion is more attractive to people who want to be in control because they are. In Christianity, you're not in control. It's yield. It's worship to God and meet him where he is. But that's what gets you saved, is letting God do the work in you instead of you trying to do it yourself.
If you've just tuned in, I'm talking with Pastor Will Davis, Jr. He wrote a book called A Man Who Told Us the Truth. In the time we have left, and there is so much in this book, folks, but I'd like Pastor Davis to tell us the story about an unlikely convert.
Yeah.
And he found his way down.
I do remember that one, Dwight.
And he found his way down in New Orleans during Mardi Gras.
I'm not going to tell you the whole story because I'll cry.
Yes.
And I also want you to buy the book and read the end of it.
Exactly.
It's dramatic. But Larry Bassard is a guy I met in the late 80s who wound up at my little tiny church in Austin, Texas at the time, a month after he'd been to Mardi Gras and gotten saved on Bourbon Street. He was 38 years old, had been gay 25 years, and was HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
And he had walked and was also a two-decade alcoholic and cocaine user.
Oh, boy.
And Larry walked into my church at 38. This is back in the 80s when nobody knows what AIDS is or how
yes. mm-hmm.
Transferred. And so there's a lot of scariness about this. And Larry had an encounter on Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras with a group of Christians from, of all places, Chillicothe, Missouri.
Yeah.
That from which he did not recover. He went to attack them. And, why are you guys here? You don't belong here. It's Mardi Gras. Get out of my face. You're a real buzzkill. To 2 hours later, kneeling in love he'd never known before, and getting up, and never, until he died a decade later, never once again having acted out with alcohol or sex or anything else. He was actually leading a Bible study for people that came to Christ out of the gay lifestyle.
I see.
And Larry is the most dramatic conversion experience I've had the pleasure of knowing. He became a dear friend of mine. I did his funeral. And he distinguishes to me the difference between religion and Christianity, because he grew up Catholic, but also had some bad experiences at the hands of the church, as many of us had.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, if Jesus is willing to go to Bourbon Street, because Christianity says, I'll come to you, you don't come to me. If Jesus is willing to go to Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras to reach a guy who hated God and was acting out and was everything the church says you're not supposed to be, if Jesus would go to Bourbon Street to get a guy like Larry, and make that radical of change, he'll go anywhere to get anybody, including me. And it to me is kind of the bottom line I give to the people that read the book, is this is what Jesus does for people. He don't want to judge you. Don't want to throw the book at you. He wants to heal you. And he'll go anywhere. He'll go anywhere to heal you. And that's kind of my, there's stuff after that, but that's kind of me putting my cards on the table, Larry's story.
And I must say to our listeners, that story towards the end of the book is worth the price of the book. Pastor Will, where can our listeners get a copy of your book, A Man Who Told Us the Truth?
Thank you. Any good author would say, thank you for asking that. it's on Amazon.
Okay.
It's also on my website, which honestly might be better. My website is willdavisjr.com,
okay.
willdavisjr.com. I've got a deal there where if you, because people are buying it in bulk, after they read one copy, they come back and order between 20 and 50 to give them away.
Yes.
Some people are now flying on airlines, and they'll take a book with them and leave it in the seat back pocket in front of them for the next passenger.
Yeah.
So if you buy more than 20 copies on my website, they're just $5.
Okay.
They're $10 on Amazon. So if you want to buy bulk copies, go to my website, Will Davis Jr., and there'll be $5 for 20 bucks or more, or you can just get a few and pay $10 for them in either place. But that's all it's available in right now. We'll have a broader distribution in the fall.
Pastor Will, thank you so much for being with us on LifeQuest today.
I'm honored, Dwight. I'm thankful for the chance to talk about the book, and I'm proud of you and your show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.